Okay, ChatGPT, let's see how good you are. Right, could you write an introduction to the Robot Podcast in the style of... Let's do it. In the style of me, Fran Scott. Let's see if this works. Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to the Robot Podcast, the show where we explore the cutting edge of robotics and artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Fran Scott, and I am thrilled to guide you through the exciting developments in this ever-evolving field. As technology advances at breakneck speed, robotics and AI have become essential components of our daily lives, from self-driving cars to voice assistants and beyond. But how do these futuristic machines work? And what are the ethical implications of creating intelligent machines? And what impact will they have on our society? On the Robot Podcast, we'll dive deep into these questions and more with insightful interviews with experts, entrepreneurs, and innovators from the world of robotics. So whether you're a tech enthusiast, a curious beginner, or simply intrigued by the future of robotics and AI, the Robot Podcast is the show for you. Sit back, relax, and join us on this thrilling journey into the world of intelligent machines. That was really weird to read, but it really wasn't bad, considering it was all written by ChatGPT, which is an artificial intelligence program. Now, ChatGPT, it's a natural language processing tool. And if you don't know, it allows us to have conversations in a human style. It can respond to questions, write letters and documents, and it can even generate computer code. In this new series of the Robot Podcast, we will indeed be exploring the cutting-edge world of robotics and artificial intelligence. We'll be looking at things from healthcare to the environment, from manufacturing to robots working at the extremes. But we will not be chatting about self-driving cars, and we definitely won't be getting into the inner workings of Siri. But if you hadn't already guessed, in this first episode of the new series, we are going to be looking at artificial intelligence, which we all know as AI. Later on in this episode, we will be hearing from our friend of the show, the wonderful Dr. Sami Atiya, President of Robotics and Discrete Automation at ABB. And we'll be hearing his thoughts on AI and how it works alongside ABB Robotics. But first, we are going to hear from Dr. Kate Devlin. She's a reader in artificial intelligence and society at King's College London. And we had a brilliant chat about this new kid on the tech block and what impact it could have on society.
It's been really interesting to watch this rise of ChatGPT. This only happened sort of November last year. And within a month, it had a million users, actually, in less than a week. It has completely changed the landscape for AI. It's a large language model. It's machine learning software, and it draws on online content, and it is able to look at that content, find out what the context is, which is something that's quite new for chatbots. And then if you give it a prompt or a question, it'll generate a response that seems really plausible. It's not always accurate, but it is usually plausible.
So I'm dyslexic, and so I can have an idea in my head and I can understand a concept, but sometimes getting that onto paper is the hardest part of the step for me. I see AI as being this tool I can use, but it can never be more creative than me, because that's the difference between a human brain. And that's just my opinion.
You've stumbled on a topic that goes really deep in terms of philosophy, because there is an area of creativity and AI where that exact question gets discussed a lot. What does it mean to be creative? Where does that creativity come from? Could a machine ever do that? And the thing about these AI models is we don't know what goes on in the black box in the middle. So we know how they're built. We know that we give it input. We know that it generates output. But there's a huge amount of hidden layers, the deep learning part, where we don't quite know what goes on. And sometimes it produces what's referred to as hallucinations. And these can be really interesting, particularly from a creative point of view, because they will give us something that we as humans might never have imagined. However, I do agree with you. This is all trained on human content. So that content is taking things that are online, pictures, websites, Reddit discussions, up to a point in 2021. And then they have let the model, the AI, look at all of that, process it all, and it gets an understanding. Of course, it doesn't really understand the content, but it looks for patterns. It sees those patterns, and then it produces something that it thinks is similar to those patterns based on the prompt you give it. So yes, it's really just taking human information and repurposing it.
There's that classic phrase, isn't there? The dull, dirty, and dangerous jobs that through technology like this can be then offloaded onto machines. Conversely to what people might think, that this takes jobs away from humans, what do you think this will open up opportunity-wise for the living human being?
There's no doubt that some jobs are going to be under threat from this. You can already see applications where this is going to be really useful. Things like copywriting and perhaps those coding things where there's quite simple bits of code that need to be written. As it progresses, these could get more and more sophisticated. But there need to be people who are skilled in this still to be able to check what's happening, to be able to test the output that's coming out. There's lots of talk about, will we have prompt engineers in future? People who know how to optimize the prompts that we give these pieces of software so that they return the best answer for us. And we still have a lot of work out there that just can't be automated. One example of that is care work. There's a huge amount of care work needed, and we simply don't have the technology to replace human carers. All those jobs that require that human element still, and we'll see new jobs emerging. Before there was an internet, there was no web designers or web developers. So we will see jobs that arise from the development of this technology as well.
Does it actually give us the freedom that we hope it will? Or does it just mean that we're still just as busy, just doing different things?
The vision people have is either very utopian, where we've suddenly got all of this free time and no one has to work anymore, or they're really dystopian and suddenly everyone's out of a job and we're scrambling to get work and then we're expected to produce more. I think there is a middle line. I think it's not as bad as either of those extremes. But when technology comes along and is disruptive like this, often we'll adapt to it.
As a human, it seems as acceptable, but when a machine does it, it's seen as unacceptable.
Yeah, so when we create things, we often base it on things that we've seen. We often base it on previous work that people have done. The thing about the AI models is they can do this at a huge scale and can probably do it a lot better than most of us. So they can adapt very quickly to those new styles and surpass us very quickly. So there definitely are questions there about how that's done, what data it's been trained on, and whether or not they've had permission to do that. Every university in the land was thinking, this means the SA is gone now. We're going to have to return to putting people into rooms and forcing them to sit exams, which I think is a really bad idea, because exams aren't an accessible format for everyone. And they're more or less based on memory than anything else. What we need to do is come up with new ways of assessing things in a landscape where it's very easy to generate stuff. So we might want to look at bringing work that students do back into the classroom, into the lecture hall, into the seminar room, and getting them to work in groups, getting them to create things together rather than going away and doing it on their own with an AI. And over the next few years, I think we'll see more and more the ChatGPT and the large language model tools being built into existing software. So there's already talk about how can we integrate this into, say, word processors like Word, in the same way that tools like grammar or spell checkers are in there already.
Linking on to robots being, in inverted commas, creative, what do you think about the ideas of robots making other robots?
There is a chance that we could make AI that can create AI, and subsequently, if we embed that AI in robots, then robots that can build other robots. So yes, that is a possibility. And there's a big crossover between AI, which is the software side of this. Mostly these days we mean machine learning, and robotics, where they will have, as it were, the brain that is AI. So they will be controlled by AI, and they will use that to pick up cues from the environment, to process information and to respond. And there are these wonderful examples where we can clearly see they're making a marked improvement in people's lives. And yet at the same time, there are threats. So what do we do? That's a big philosophical question, I think, that needs to be considered, because is there a trade-off here? Are there certain areas that we shouldn't be using it in? And then it all boils down to, well, how do we regulate? And we are really on the back foot with that. There are no worldwide regulations on AI. The EU is bringing out the AI Act. It's currently at its sort of white paper stage. And the idea at the moment is that it'll do so by saying, here's the technologies that you must never use. Things like AI that would be used to make kill decisions on a battlefield. So it's saying, we don't want autonomous weapons. And then it's got technology that could be useful, but we have to be careful with it. Things like facial recognition, which could be put to good use if you have a missing person, for example, or if you want to try and analyze certain images, or we know it also has negative effects. Maybe we shouldn't be doing predictive policing.
There has been this undercurrent of the introduction of AI going on for these past years. And we're going, oh, hang on, I didn't quite know this was happening. Is this right? Public can sway innovation one way or another, you know, with the steam age and the introduction of the steam factories. And so I suppose getting everyone to truly understand what's happening, what the benefits are, and what we need to look at in terms of going to the future.
I'm involved in a really cool project called Cat Royale, and it's all about, would you let a robot and an AI system care for your pet? A cat utopia where they have a robot arm and an AI camera system to create an environment where cats can be pandered to, have their every need met, whether it's feeding them or playing with them, examining sort of what are the trade-offs there? How much do the cats like this? Can we measure happiness? What interested me is that if you say to someone, hey, we could use robots to look after old people because we have a lack of carers, and people say, yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. And then you say to them, maybe a robot could look after your cat. And they say, oh, I don't know if I'll allow that. And it's this wonderfully British thing of our cats and our pets are so precious. Would you let a robot look after your granny? Would you let a robot look after your child? Would you let a robot look after your cat? I'm fascinated to find out the answers to that. So we're going to be doing a video of that in the Science Gallery in London, where I'm going to be looking for people's opinions on whether or not they think a robot should look after their cat.
The brilliant Kate Devlin there, reader in Artificial Intelligence and Society at King's College London. Now, if I had a cat, would I let it be looked after by AI and robotics? I actually think I would. I do trust robotics to do what you program them to do. So yeah, I'm on board with that. Now, according to analysis by Swiss bank UBS, ChatGPT is the fastest growing app of all time. And what's more, the online data company DemandSage reports that it's expected to generate an impressive revenue of $1 billion by the end of 2024, with almost 12% of current users being based in the United States and 6% in India. But developing artificial intelligence has been going on for decades. And Dr. Sami Atiya, president of robotics and discrete automation at ABB, actually did his PhD on AI more than three decades ago. So while AI is certainly a popular topic, it's definitely not a new one.
AI actually was always a hot topic with many ups and downs over the decades. But certainly AI has its roots back to the Second World War, when machines were used for code breaking from Alan Turing. Since then, a lot had happened. One of the big events was when Deep Blue, which is an IBM computer, actually beat Kasparov in chess. That happened in 1997. And then afterwards, you know, DeepMind from Google beat AlphaGo, which was much more complex, but it used neural networks. And neural networks are really the key now for the development. I mean, in essence, they are how our brain works, if you may.
So you've mentioned neural networks and that being similar to how the human brain works. Could you expand a little bit on what neural networks actually are?
Neural networks is a system that imitates what we have in our brains. It really acts like a biological system, but it's in the computer. But these systems actually learn from data without explicitly being programmed. And there are three ways that these systems learn. One is what we call supervised learning. That's how we humans learn. You tell the system, you know, a picture, but then you tell the system that's the right picture or wrong picture. Then there's unsupervised. The system learns from itself by feed its data, and then it tries to figure out things. And the latest one is reinforcement learning, where basically you reward the system if it does something good. You punish the system if it does something bad. So think of it. It's quite close to how we humans really learn. And this has really evolved now with all the computing power that these systems come much closer to how we humans think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So has AI become the thing that you expected it to be, or has it morphed? Has it changed over the years?
AI has always developed in phases. It started off by using algorithms, using probabilistic methods and neural networks. But in over the last couple of decades, neural networks was really the one that prevailed. And the reason for that is that, you know, computing power really grew tremendously. And then also not using only one layer of neural networks, but deep, what we call deep neural networks. And the last is also the availability of massive data in the internet. So you bring this all together, that really created a huge momentum in AI. But it started off by using AI for more analytical type of work, but it evolved over time to more predictive. And now the very new AI technology is obviously what we see in ChatGPT, which is what we call the generative AI, which is a more creative type of AI.
Definitely, definitely. And loads of people have been talking about ChatGPT. What are your immediate thoughts? Like, have you actually tried it?
Absolutely. I tried it quite intensively, and I use it for many topics. But I personally really think it's a revolution. I've been in this industry now for so many decades and I've watched it come and go. And ChatGPT, and especially what we call Transformers, which is the new technology that ChatGPT is based on, is really groundbreaking. And it will boost AI to the next level. I mean, OpenAI's ChatGPT and Google brand are probably the most prominent examples. They basically use what they call large language models, and they learn from a huge amount of publicly available data, and the results are just surely impressive. But it also has its flaws. I mean, there are many mistakes we all know about when we chat with it, and also sometimes it says something wrong and it insists on it that it is right, and that is what we call hallucination. And that makes it a tool that we need to use very, very carefully. But Facebook took 54 months to reach 100 million users. TikTok needed 9 months, and ChatGPT reached that audience in just 2 months. So you can see the power of it.
Absolutely. And ChatGPT is obviously a form of AI that's becoming used generally in the population. But when it comes to AI, how is that helping you in the world of robotics?
So first, robots really excel at tasks humans find difficult. So repetitive, dull, dangerous tasks. And AI makes really robots better at fulfilling these tasks. So I strongly believe that this has a huge potential for productivity and for companies to perform even better. So we have been using analytical AI and many other methods for quite some time, and we see strong results. We already use them in our customers. A good example is quality inspection. I mean, we can make the robot learn to spot microscopic defects in automobile welding, and it is about 20 times faster performing that task than a human being. We use AI also for object recognition, for example, in warehouses and fulfillment centers, where the robot with vision systems sees an object and recognize how to grab it without having seen it ever before, which is really important when you want to have robots become more autonomous and do things that they have not, learned. And then one great example is we use it in our mobile robots. These are robots that have wheels and drive around. And we are able now, what we call Visual SLAM, which is a 3D vision system using AI, and it will revolutionize how we move goods around the factory and warehouses. And its essence, this system drives around, looks at the environment, maps it, and creates an understanding of where it stands and where it can go. And also then later starts recognizing, is this a human? So I don't put the human in the map because it's going to move away. I will just wait. If it's an object that is more fixed, I would put it in my map. So it really learns as it goes, and it's going to revolutionize how we operate in warehouses. And, you know, a nice example is how we are replicating human skills, for example, Chinese calligraphy. Our Yumi basically learns from watching how a human is writing a Chinese calligraphy. And then after watching it, it imitates exactly how the human is doing it without programming. So think of the applications for that. So, for example, you can start having an experienced welder do a welding of a car or a device or a metal, and then the robot just watches it and does exactly that. And if you think we have 400,000 open welding positions in the US, what that really means in terms of productivity, you teach the robot learns, and then it just replicates what it really learns. So huge applications that we see already today, and expect much more to come.
So what comes next? Could you see a use for generative AI in other applications?
Absolutely. Generative AI is the next step in the evolution of neural networks. And it has the capability to predict and to generate basically text, but also can generate voice or pictures. Today, ChatGPT can also do code generation, and it's actually quite good. So think of the productivity you have if you can just tell the system, I need, you know, specific functions, and the system basically generates the code, the programming code immediately. And also, you know, telling the robot what it needs to do is the next step. You have a voice recognition system, and then you can describe the task as opposed to program the task. So stand in front of the robots and say, grab that cup of tea, move it to the other glass, and please don't destroy anything, which is a natural. But
and
but
please that, don't destroy is a good addition,
yes,
as well.
Yeah, because I mean you have to tell the robot what it needs to do. But think of these applications. So and they will evolve over time. I mean, ultimately, ChatGPT is good in text, in code, in image, in video. But think of in the future, you can actually have design done with it. You know, you tell the system, I would like to have a design of a house or interior and so on. So big applications. It's very exciting how this field will evolve.
I completely agree, by the way. But there is this public perception, which can be quite fearful when it comes to AI. So are you concerned about the potential misuse of AI? And what actually are the risks?
There are rightful concerns about fake news, photos, videos, and also data storage, and also the source of the data. For example, the internet is full of biases and misleading data. So there is also a tendency, and there's a lot of literature on it, how the system will discriminate already marginalized group of people. And that is something that needs to be watched, that we need to have humans interact into these systems, security, privacy, also, you know, this lack of transparency and accountability, because you don't know where the source of that data is coming from. That's why I believe that if you want to use the systems for professional use, you will see more encapsulated data than you can draw on it, because then you can know where it really is coming from. So it's like in history always, you know, new technologies have huge advantages, but we need to make sure that we understand the risks and also know how to use them as a tool and avoid tapping into the problem areas.
Absolutely. And that is such an important point. Thank you. Now let's return to where we started. And you studied AI for your PhD 30 years ago, but what do you see happening for the next 30 years? So people like you that are studying their PhD in AI right now, what do you think will happen 30 years from after they get their doctorate?
Well, Fran, that's a very good question. But who would have predicted ChatGPT just 5 years ago? I think predicting beyond 5 years is going to be difficult. But I truly think that it has the huge potential to be a real catalyst for innovation, for new products, for new services, to develop with AI at their heart, particularly in an area of customer service, internet, and healthcare, and many, many others. I think AI will accelerate the transformation of manufacturing and operations, and also accelerate more sustainable, environmentally friendly processes. For example, in automating the construction sector, increasing efficiencies and delivering higher qualities. And AI has also the potential to rapidly lower the barriers to enter for the automation of thousands of small and medium-sized enterprises, because they don't have real PhDs sitting there and trying to program. If you provide them simple systems that you can talk to even, you know, think of how these smaller companies will become much, much more productive. And I think that AI will assist professionals like doctors, lawyers, engineers with advice, design, treatment plans. So fascinating how this will evolve. And we need to keep an eye on the applications, the risks. But I'm absolutely sure that, as always in humanity, time and time and again, we have seen that we can deal with these tools and we will grow and become more productive and a better society.
Dr. Sami Atiyah, President of Robotics and Discrete Automation at ABB. And what an insight he gives us into this world, not only working in it now, but it's what he studied 30 years ago. And we could have chatted for hours, because we know the importance of AI, not only in robotics, but in society as a whole. But that is it for this week. And of course, a massive thank you to our guests, Dr. Kate Devlin and Dr. Sami Atiyah. Next week, it's all about the factories of the future and how robotics is influencing the way that industry is changing. I'm Fran Scott. The Robot Podcast is a Fresh Air production for ABB. The producers are Graham Seaman and Izzy Clark. And don't forget, follow now for free wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Part of the ABB Decoded series.